Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, welcome back from our spring break.
Yes, it's been a good one.
We took a few weeks off.
Mm-hmm.
You went to Italy.
I did.
I went to New Jersey.
Just as good.
What's the difference?
I'm not sure.
I'm sure they both have the situation.
That's right. Oh, God, I hope not. No situation to be found in Italy.
Yeah, we skipped whatever the major movies were for the past 3 weeks. We did see bits and pieces.
There weren't many major movies. I think we came back just in time for the biggest major movie possibly
because
of all time.
If you see one movie this year, I will laugh at you if it's Red Joan.
That's not the movie I'm talking about, but we will get to that one.
Of course we're talking about Avengers Endgame. Don't worry, we're not going to spoil it.
Nope, no spoilers.
We will talk around it. Uh-huh. We will talk close to it. I won't tell you who does what.
No, it's more important.
This is a safe podcast.
Yes, it's more important that we're just talking about what we got from it or failed to get from it and why it's going to be so freaking huge, Charlie. It just is.
Well, it already broke a record. It broke a Thursday night record. It's gonna break the weekend record of all time. No movie ever has achieved $300 million over a domestic weekend. They didn't think this one would. It might shatter that.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's going to just shatter it.
And I think it actually kind of deserves to. I was very, very satisfied with how Avengers Endgame played out.
Avengers Endgame is the 22nd film in this franchise, and they're not counting Howard the Duck. They're counting.
God.
They're starting with 2008's Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Avengers Infinity War, which just came out 1 year ago, seems longer, ended on a massive cliffhanger, possibly the greatest cliffhanger in cinematic history, this is not one film cut into two like they did with Twilight,
right,
like they did with Harry Potter. We thought this was going to be one film cut into two. How could this not pick up right where Infinity War left off at the snap of his fingers? But it's not. It's its own film. Infinity War was Thanos' story. It was the villain's story. It was the heroes lost, the villains won. He snapped his fingers and half of humanity disappeared. They turned to dust.
And we were left to wait for a year to figure out how in the world they were going to reconcile all of that and still end this franchise in a positive way.
Endgame is not the villain's story. It's the hero story. In fact, it's the original hero story. We thought the people who turned to dust at the end of Infinity War was kind of random. Why this person? Why not that person? But it turns out they kept all of the original Avengers alive. So our main characters are, of course, still the main three, Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor. But the rest of them, the Hulk, Black Widow, and Hawkeye, those six Avengers from 2012's Avengers,
mm-hmm.
They're back. And they're the ones that are going to attempt to right wrongs, to see what they can do to recover humanity.
Yeah.
And it's 3 hours long. It only seemed like 2.5.
It seemed like 2 hours and 15 minutes to me. I actually was pleasantly surprised at how quickly this movie just kept you engaged. I was never bored in this film over the course of 3 hours, which is quite phenomenal. Didn't need a pee break. There's all these stories now about, oh my God, when do you go to the bathroom? You don't. You cannot leave the theater to go to the bathroom. Go to the bathroom before the movie starts. Don't drink a big gulp. And then just wait, and you can hit the loo when the film is over.
You do have to plan. I stopped drinking water quite early that day. It's directed by the brothers, Joe and Anthony Russo. They did what's widely considered the best Avengers film, Captain America Winter Soldier. They did Captain America Civil War, and they did Infinity War. And they succeed again. They know how to do these large casts, very detailed, very complex plot sort of episodes. But why, Hannah, is Endgame being billed as this final, as this finale, when Guardians 3 is around the corner, Spider-Man 2's coming up?
Yeah.
Is it because it's the last of the group films?
I don't know. I think once you've seen it, you understand why it has that name. I don't want to spoil anything, but certainly I've always loved the Avengers movies for primarily that dynamic between Iron Man and Captain America. Those two guys played by Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans. It's their sort of witty banter. It's just their relationship to me was always the crux of these films. Thor was always just sort of a fun aside. But it's Captain America and Iron Man. And what I think Endgame is really attempting to do is to really bring their characters' story arc full circle or to a good conclusion. And so to me, that's where the Endgame comes in. It's a satisfying final, but nothing is ever final in the superhero universe. And certainly it's apparent that time is never can always be played with in some way. And so I would not be terribly surprised to see some things change in 5 or 10 years that will kind of reinvigorate some of these story points. But I just thought this was a really well done finale, if it is that. So I loved almost everything about it. I will say the one drawback for me, which I just was disappointed by, was the lack of anything and in the post credits. You know, we've become so used to sitting there and waiting and watching all those credits at the end of the film in order to just get something, just to throw us a little bone about something that's coming up or something that will just leave the audience feeling like they got a little extra boost from sticking around. And there was a collective groan when, after 3 hours of watching this film and sitting through the final end credits, when there was nothing. And so, you know, that to me was the only true disappointment of this entire experience.
However, Endgame is for the fans.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like all the other 21 films in this franchise were all referenced, maybe in an inside joke way, in a wink nudge way, frequently in a cameo way. This is a very, very large cast. If you've seen them before, you'll probably see them again, even if it's just very briefly.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of Easter eggs we missed.
Absolutely.
Speaking of Easter eggs, if you want to press pause right now, you can go try this out. Go to Google and just go to the main search bar, type in Thanos. And if you go over to the right side of the screen and click Thanos' glove with the Infinity Stones on it, just watch and see what happens. Mm. Even Google's playing with it. It's quite funny.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, and even if you don't quite understand, which I never really did, exactly how all those Infinity Stones came about and where they've been and where they went, and you can still really enjoy this movie. But you're right, this is still for the Marvel Cinematic Universe fan base, of which there are obviously many. And I just think that why the buzz is so great is that for that fan base, this film just delivers. It just simply does.
Yeah, no arguments. I think our biggest difference is I prefer Infinity War. It was one of the most... Thanos is one of the most complex villains ever. At points, his plan is horrible. It's a disgusting plan. But you almost feel empathy for him at certain points. And it brings up these really big ideas. And it's such a gut punch of an ending. You never see... Heroes just don't lose. They don't lose. Even on the brink of death, you know they're going to win. But in Infinity War, they don't win, which is so shocking. I loved that jaw-dropping gut punch that nobody was expecting.
You love to end on a gut punch. I love to end on that emotional... tearjerker yet just satisfying heartwarming kind of film. And so to me, this is very much a chick flick hidden in a superhero adventure flick. And that's why I liked it.
A parallel here is there are those of us who like Empire Strikes Back the best, even though it's kind of a downer. The rebels lose. They get their clocks cleaned. But many people prefer movies where they blow up the Death Star.
And I like movies where there's just sort of where you just leave the theater feeling pretty darn good about what you just saw and feeling some emotional catharsis. And I definitely did.
Yeah, well said. This is a visually spectacular film. It was very moving. I will admit, a tear rolled down my cheek.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely.
The guy next to me, literally jumped out of his seat.
Half the theater was audibly just losing their minds and sobbing. But, my cold heart shed a tear in this film.
Wow, okay. Absolutely. Good enough. And for our next movie, something tells me your cold heart remains cold.
My cold heart is actually just disappointed in the next film. I love spy thrillers, and this takes place in and near and around and through World War II. I mean, this is ripe for intrigue and espionage and sabotage and awesomeness. And it's actually a story about a girl trying to lose her virginity.
Oh, no, I didn't get that.
I know, that's
of
more
it.
Of a tongue in cheek joke, but
a guy perspective, maybe.
Loosely, very loosely based on a true story. In 2000.
Wait, are we even... Let's tell them what the name of this movie is.
Well, we're talking about Joni here. We're talking about Red Joan. Red Joan. In 2000, real life, in England, a woman in her 80s was arrested on 27 counts of espionage, passing atomic secrets to the Soviets back in the 30s and the 40s. I guess just the 40s.
And I think even into the 50s. 50s.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh man, this is going to be juicy. Mm-hmm. But really, it's a flashback. Yeah. You know, she's being interrogated, and after she says one sentence, all right, let's go back to 1938 Cambridge. After she says another sentence, all right, let's go back into the Blitz in 1943 London. And it just became so relentlessly plotting, and it was really just about everything other than passing secrets to the Soviets.
It was boring. And the saddest part of this is that it has Judi Dench in it. But I think it's very misleading. Anybody who sees the trailer and the movie poster and the synopses, they are seeing Judi Dench as the star of this film. And she is not in it all that much. She is merely a vehicle, a high-profile vehicle, used to bookend this story in flashbacks that actually stars Sophie Cookson, who's not bad, but she's not Judi Dench. And so Sophie Cookson is the one who plays the young Joan, who is the one that we see getting sort of recruited by these young communist sympathizers and falling in love with this communist bad boy named Leo. And so it really is not a Judi Dench film. When Judi Dench is on screen, I watched. I paid attention. I was sort of a little in it. But it's not enough. And it just bored me to tears. And it's so sad because, yes, this seems like it should be an incredibly fascinating story.
Even though Judi Dench is in the film for a baker's dozen of minutes, she's very good. Of course, she's still very good. And Sophie Cookson, I thought, was equal. She was. I found her
She's good.
She was compelling with what she had. Mm-hmm. And when I say loosely based, I'm talking about the real-life woman didn't even go to Cambridge. She went to, Southampton, even though Cambridge is known for, especially in the 30s, being a hotbed of communist sympathizing and future spies, especially Kim Philby. It's a very famous name. It's called the Cambridge Five that came out of Cambridge and passed a lot of secrets to the Soviet Union. And they know that. The filmmakers know that. That's why they're lumping in Joan, even not her real name in real life. Directed by Trevor Nunn. He is not a film director by trade. Mm-hmm. He's a theater director, and he goes back a long way with Judi Dench. They first got together in the late 60s doing Shakespeare, Twelfth Night, that sort of thing, back in British theater. So it's almost like she's doing him a favor.
Absolutely. It feels that way.
Appearing in this film. I don't know if the novel is... Maybe the novel is amazing. That's why it was so compelling. But it does not transfer from the page to the screen. There's no suspense. There's no tension. Even when she's actually taking pictures and squirreling things away in her purse and, like, internal affairs comes down because they know there's a spy. I wasn't suspended. I had no tension. I didn't care.
Me either. That's actually what I noted is that at the end of this mere 100 minutes of a film, to me, it made the 3-hour-long Avengers movie feel like an Oscar short, you know? Because that's how long this 100-minute movie felt, that it just moved slowly and never spiked in the drama. And the biggest drawback for me was that I never understood or cared about what Joan's motivations truly were.
And that could have been great. It borders on really big ideas. Her idea is, well, she was horrified by Hiroshima. Horrified. And she feels guilty for helping Britain build a bomb. She feels if you give more people the bomb, this is a paradox, the world will be safer, be more peaceful. A lot of people, you know, were against that back then. Why the Soviets are evil, even though they are our allies. They don't explore that.
Right.
They don't explore it at all.
No, and even the real-life spy, Melita Norwood, who was arrested, but not, I don't think she was ever, she was certainly never prosecuted.
She was never prosecuted.
But this movie sort of starts out the same way that Norwood's story was sort of revealed, and that she gives this press conference in her suburban garden, and she really has no remorse. She's still, decades later, as an octogenarian great-grandma.
She says she was right.
She still stands by her convictions. And that's where I'm like, why aren't we feeling the why or behind her? I think you needed to understand and embrace her motivations a little more. And you don't get that. Instead, I think the, you know, love story, on again, off again, relationship love story with this guy, Leo, clouds, you know, it just muddies the waters. And so there's no payoff. It's like, are we trying to be a love story or are we trying to be a spy thriller? And in the end, neither one actually emerges.
No, I think the film answers that question. It's a love, it wants to be a romance. She gets attracted to the bad boy, like the James Dean character, this rogue, who you know is only using her, but mm-hmm. she's got this first love crush on the guy. And there's so many minutes are devoted to that. And then there's another guy who's already married, but's in love with Joan. And that's got so many minutes.
Yeah, and this is about Joan's love life. Sense. And they never, there's no character development, though, to support the relationship that she develops with these individual guys. And so it was just all in all just a disappointment.
A dramatic, terrible disappointment. Absolutely.
Yep.
Let's talk about a film that we both saw during our sabbatical.
Yes.
But I think we both liked it enough to want to mention it. It's still in theaters, but it didn't make any money. But it's still hiding out there.
Nobody's heard of it. It's kind of strange that it just really came in just languages.
And if I'm talking about Teen Spirit. So if you loved Flashdance, if you loved Girls Just Want to Have Fun, if you loved Vox Lux, then Teen Spirit might be in your wheelhouse. It's about a girl who shouldn't, who does. Elle Fanning is on the farm, on the Isle of Wight, which is out there. Rural, on a failing farm, dad left, mom's depressed. She's in high school, but she's already a waitress working for lousy tips. And she tries out for British American Idol, Teen Spirit. And she makes it. Like, through round after round, she's making it. And she's singing. And Elle Fanning is good.
She is good. That's what the only reason to see this film, to me, is that it shows just really an amazing talent, a voice talent that Elle Fanning has. And this, to me, played very much like if you took a mainstream movie and you shoved it through the filter of an indie lens, then that is what Teen Spirit is, because it very much kind of satirizes in some ways those reality competition shows, your American Idol, your X Factor, Britain's Got Talent. If you like any of those, you might actually really just enjoy this film. It's a feel-good movie in the end. It's a modern-day Cinderella story, or at least it's trying to be. I read that that the director, it's the first time directorial debut from the actor, British actor Max Minghella, who does He's in The Handmaid's Tale. And he wrote this, and apparently he penned the first draft, like, way back in 2009. And it was going to be, it was set in Poland, the first draft. And the expectation was that it would just be one of these small indie foreign films that actually had an unknown in the lead. But they couldn't find anybody that would really fit that bill, that could do the acting and the singing and kind of pull off this makeover into pop stardom. And so Elle Fanning had seen the script, and she kind of lobbied for this role. And it sort of had a bit of a metamorphosis over time and ended up getting set in England. And so with her mother being this Polish immigrant single mother. So it's as much of an indie mainstream kind of crossover mesh as I think you could possibly get right now. But I kind of understand why it's not necessarily striking a chord in theaters. I think, to me, this is a perfectly good film to just kind of keep in the back of your mind for the Netflix queue or for streaming or renting down the line. It doesn't really need to be seen on the big screen.
Teen Spirit's palate cleanser. Like, if I watch something really heavy or really dour or morose or serious, I would watch Teen Spirit for pluck. The songs are really, I've been listening
they're
to the
catchy
soundtrack. They're not great,
right?
But, I mean, for movie songs, they're very good and they're catchy, and I've been humming them. Max Minghella is the son of a name I recognize, many of you will too, Anthony Minghella, who has since passed away, but he directed The English Patient, and he directed Cold Mountain, very famous name, and now his son is well on his way to learning how to make films. And I just, more than her singing, Elle Fanning just gives a great, understated, restrained performance as Violet. She's not showy, she's not flashy, she doesn't even think she's that good. And she's just so quiet and unassuming. I love her performance.
Well, and part of it is this relationship that she develops with this sort of washed-up former opera singer who she kind of meets along the way, who then becomes her mentor and kind of helps her figure out how to find her voice and to find her stage presence in order to compete on this show. But of course, it's, you know, one thing that bothered me is, like, it's always the coach is always some washed up alcoholic. Like, why is every single...
Remember Hugh Jackman?
Yes, that's exactly the person I was thinking about when I'm watching this. And I'm like, really? Do all coaches have to have a drinking problem in these movies? But it is a very interesting relationship, the bond that she forms with this guy who I think is trying to redeem himself. He obviously is estranged from his own adult daughter, and so he sees this opportunity in mentoring Violet to kind of get himself sort of a new lease. And so it's a bittersweet kind of side plot that's going on there. I do recall that the ending is not your mainstream tie it all up wonderful feel good ending, but it was interesting, and I kind of thought about it a little more. I didn't like the ending at first, but as I kind of sat with it a little bit, I kind of got where they were going. So it's a decent flick. I think it's a good directorial debut, good outing, and absolutely something that's worth potentially considering putting in the queue, especially if you like, if you watch The Voice and American Idol and all of those.
It's not much of a clash this week. I mean, I agree. I agree. Teen Spirit's just fine. In fact, it's more than fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And so maybe we can clash next week because there's a lot of very, actually, maybe not because our politics are not so diverse, but
yeah, it's like we agree politically too.
But there are quite a few, it's a pretty politics heavy lineup coming up next week. And so what are we seeing next week, Charlie?
Well, first off, we're going to a very interesting thing on Monday night. Being released on Netflix next Wednesday is a documentary called Knock Down the House about four female unsuspecting, surprising candidates for the House of Representatives last term who ended up winning, most famously Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And this is a documentary following them, and the director will be there for a Q&A. We'll be downtown at the Navy Memorial. We've been there a couple times for screenings. It's a wonderful place to watch a film. And yeah, I'm getting a babysitter at night. My wife's coming too.
It's a screening event, as we like to call it.
But you saw one. that I didn't see that you're going to talk about, probably the biggest opener next week.
Yeah, which is Long Shot. It's a political comedy starring Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron. You'll find out what I thought of it. It got a tremendous amount of buzz coming out of South by Southwest. So I went into it with rather high expectations, and I'll tell you what I came out of it with.
I'm going to see one that you're not going to watch. It's called Long Day's Journey Into Night, and people are raving about, they just keep saying it has a 59-minute single take in 3D. I'm not seeing it in 3D, but they say you don't have to see it in 3D, but it's a 59-minute, like, just stun you to death single take, and sign me up. I am in.
Well, and then I'm going to still try to get you to see the White Crow, which is a biopic that is essentially about the defection of Soviet dancer Rudolf Nureyev back in France in 1961. So I think it's sort of more in your wheelhouse than mine, actually. So we'll see if you get around to seeing that. And, of course, what's the biggest family movie that is supposed to be coming out next week? Ugly Dolls. I don't know.
I don't think we're going to see that. I actually caught up with the two most recent family films. I took my son to see Missing Link, and I took him to see the new Disney documentary Penguins. He liked them more than I did.
Well, Ugly Dolls will either be a pleasant animated diversion from everything else out there, or possibly Kelly Clarkson's worst film since From Kelly to Justin.
I'll let you know, because I'm going to end up seeing it. But, okay. Maybe not next week.
Yes.
Quick recap. Endgame is everything fans wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, that is the biggest movie out this week. It is the biggest movie put out this year. And it will have staying power. People will watch it repeatedly for fans. Again, if you've never seen a Marvel movie, don't even worry about it. You don't start with Endgame.
No.
But for those who've just been eagerly anticipating this one, it just satisfies. I think it was just an excellent way to close that franchise.
Red Joan is garbage.
It's just boring.
Just disappointing of what it just could have been.
Yeah, I don't call it garbage only because there are some movies that just would make my worst list. This doesn't make a worst list. It just makes a probably one of the most boring disappointments list.
Teen Spirit's surprising. I'm not supposed to like Teen Spirit and Elle Fanning winning a singing competition, but hook, line, and sinker, I was in.
I think you actually liked this one slightly more than I did, and you actually liked Vox Lux more than Teen Spirit.
I did.
I go the other way,
I did.
I just thought this movie is sort of like Vox Lux without all the weirdness and violence, which is what you liked about it. And so you strip all that out, and you give me Teen Spirit, and I like that one more than Vox Lux.
To a T, weirdness and violence. Very good. All right. Well, thank you very much for returning to the Cinema Clash again now that we're back. Thank you for listening. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com. And Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.